Hello and welcome to the That's Tough podcast. I'm your host, Jake Harmon, joined by my co-host, as always, Landon Twombly, my childhood hero.
Yes.
Good buddy from school. And we are joined today by the one and only Doc Harmon in this Ask Doc episode.
Yes, not axe, Doc,
not
as, axe. As if you're trying to get rid of me.
I'm nervous. Doc Harmon is here.
He's really getting to you already. We're 5 seconds in.
Just yeah. My mere presence, apparently, is enough to rattle you.
Yeah, well, welcome to the show.
I'm in your head. I'm living there rent-free right now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, it'll probably be that way for the whole show. I'm going to be honest.
Welcome, Doc. We're very glad to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, well, let's get into things here.
Should we introduce Doc first? I mean, we should only said Doc Harmon.
You go for it.
Doc Harmon is my childhood basketball coach.
Mm-hmm. Mine as well.
Yours as well.
Yeah.
He also is the husband of my high school English teacher.
Mine as well.
Yours as well. very exciting. He is a professor and doctor at Grace College.
Mm-hmm.
New Testament studies and, well, the theological seminary, I should say.
Yes.
New Testament studies in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
What else? He's your father.
He is my dad.
That is
yes,
what I was thinking.
He is my father. Yeah. He also is the co-host of the Various and Sundry podcast that we have mentioned previously on the pod.
Yeah.
And you're involved in a lot of other things as well, teaching at our church at Christ Covenant and even being our basketball coach, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
And,
occasional intramural basketball player.
Occasional. I mean, are those days over?
We'll see.
Okay.
I played last year. I'm debating whether I'm going into retirement or so. Or
okay.
Not.
Any Grace College students listening, there's a free agent on the market.
There you go. If the contract is lucrative enough, you might be able to bring me back.
He can shoot. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. That's about it, but he can shoot.
Yeah. All right. Well, Doc's just going to kind of be a co-host of this episode with us. But let's get into – you can kind of interact with us here, but let's get into picks of the week. We're going to recap what happened last week. Landon Twombly was kind of on fire this week with his picks of the week.
I'm a bummer. I'm sad I don't gamble on sports at this point because my predictions were spot on.
Yeah, let's just go over those.
Let's
real quick.
Go
well, first of all, Liverpool Chelsea did not happen.
Did not happen. Still postponed. So I
so
guess
it was
that
not
one,
a loss.
Not a loss.
Not a win. Either.
Not a win. We don't know yet.
It was not a tie either. Technically,
really, it was nothing.
It was nothing.
It was nothing.
Chiefs
Chargers.
Yeah.
Chiefs won. By
that was
three.
A great game.
Great game. Wonderful game to watch. It was a very technical game. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really enjoyed watching it. Did you watch it?
Were you picking these against the spread or just straight up?
Straight up.
Just straight up.
Money
okay.
line, straight up.
I'm
okay.
not going to lie. I don't know how the spread works.
Okay. That's probably a credit to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Phenomenal game between the back and forth with Herbert and Mahomes was great. We actually watched that game together.
We did.
We
did.
And, I mean, Justin Herbert, one of the most miraculous things that I saw from that game. I don't know if you saw this one, Doc, but there was Herbert got hurt, like he hurt his ribs
he
or
got
something.
Smushed.
And there was a play where he could have like easily run for a first down, and it was like 3rd and 5.
Yeah.
And he had a chance, and he just like threw it into the ground. It was the most like awkward thing you've ever seen. It was like that was really bizarre. And then the next play on like fourth down or whatever, he throws just a rope like 35 yards down the field on a line, and it was
perfect,
an absolute
touchdown.
Dot.
Was it, that was
it
a
was
touchdown.
Not a touchdown,
not a touchdown,
not a touchdown, but it was a dot,
just a dot.
I mean, great game,
great game,
and. We can get into this a little bit. How we feel about the Al Michaels Kirk Herbstreit pairing on Thursday Night Football?
I know how you feel about
I'm
it.
I'm a big fan.
Big
I'm
fan.
A big fan. Doc?
I think it'll just take some time to get used to hearing Herbie announce professional games.
Yeah,
I'm so accustomed to him on college broadcasts.
Yeah.
But he did fine. And
oh, yeah.
I think they seem to have pretty good chemistry with each other.
Yeah.
What I am sad about is the fact that then means that you don't get Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth on Sunday
night.
That's tough.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up watching Sunday Night Football. It was like the one – like every night we watched Sunday Night Football. So
mm-hmm.
Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth.
Legends, man.
Legends. And it's weird not having them together anymore.
Yeah, that's weird.
But I like it. I like it.
You also picked the Giants over the Panthers. That was correct. The Giants are 2-0, man.
The Giants are 2-0. I'm intrigued by the – they're not going to be good. Don't get me wrong. They're not going to like win anything. But they might – well, they're not going to win the division either. The Giants are okay.
Yeah.
Which is saying a
That's
lot.
An interesting division.
It really is.
But anyways, and then your upset pick of the week was the Dolphins over the Ravens, which I don't know if that's necessarily like an underdog, big upset necessarily. But the way that it happened
– I feel like it was definitely an upset. It was in Baltimore.
Yeah, sure. I'm just saying like – the way that the game ended, where the I don't even know where the Dolphins were down multiple touchdowns.
They were down 21 going into the fourth.
21 going into the fourth quarter, and Tua became Peyton Manning or something, and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are unbelievable.
It was electric.
Okay, but if you look at. So they were replaying the game last night on NFL Network, and so I caught the fourth quarter because that was, of course, the most exciting quarter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed was Tyreek Hill just got deep twice for like bombs and touchdowns.
Yeah.
Where again, it's just like I know that dude is fast, but how do you let him get behind you if you're the Ravens secondary? There was one where the corner clearly thought he had safety help over the top, and so there was a little bit of a stutter move, and the corner stops thinking, oh, I've got help over the top, so I should sit on this on the shorter route, and there's nobody back there. And then you see them after the play, the corner and the safety like yelling at each other like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, it was bizarre.
It is wild. It's crazy to see a guy like Tyreek Hill, who obviously is very talented, but like his main attribute is his speed. And so you'd think that teams would be, okay, safety help on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he just uncannily gets open.
He's got some wheels, dude.
He's got some wheels.
Yeah. So those were Landon's picks. So Landon basically went 3-0 pretty much. 3-0-0 kind of, because he picked a fourth game, but it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. Really don't know how to quantify that, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then I was 2-2. I was 2-2. So I was okay. I had the Vikings over the Eagles, and the Vikings just forgot how to block up front, apparently. Watching that game, Kirk Cousins had 2 seconds to throw, and I think he threw like 3 picks, 4 picks.
Oh, he was so bad.
He was horrendous.
Which I did predict, by the way, also.
You did?
I said Kirk Cousins is terrible.
Well, yeah.
In prime time.
Oh, sure. Okay. If you call that a prediction, that's fine. But
now, in fairness, he also threw a number of passes that were dropped, where he hit receivers in the hands, and the receivers just dropped them.
The Vikings went from a pretty all-time high after kind of, you know, mopping the floor with the Packers, and then kind of hit a pretty hard low after that game with the Eagles. Like, they got dominated, like, physically in that game. And then I picked a college football game, Penn State over Auburn, and that turned out to be quite the win for Penn State.
I didn't even see. No, I should know.
The Penn State won, I think it was 41-12.
Wow.
And like a blowout game. Like, they dominated Auburn physically, which was encouraging as a Big Ten fan to know one of our better teams in our conference can go into SEC country and just, you know,
beat a team.
Beat them. And beat them up too. It was not really a close game at all. That was fun to watch.
Quick sidebar, Doc. I want your opinion here. I don't have a college football team. This has been a subtle theme of the podcast. I'm looking for a college football team to support. I'm considering Penn State. I like the uniform. I think it's classic. I like the energy that they have in the stadium. Whiteout is like an electric evening.
Beaver Stadium, man. It's electric.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I just watched a YouTube video where Eli Manning went undercover.
That was funny.
And walked
that
on.
That was funny.
So what's not to like at this point?
What's not to like is they're not as good as Ohio State. And I would point out, although our listeners can't notice this, is that the colors you are wearing right now are in essence Ohio State colors.
This is true, and something I did not realize.
Which is probably God's providential way of telling you who you should be rooting for.
There you go. There you go.
I'll pray about it.
Yeah. We'll keep the listeners updated on Landon's college football alliance here. And then the other game I picked was the Cardinals over the Raiders, which was not really a pretty game for the Cardinals. I think they were down like 21-7.
A couple of meltdowns this week.
Yeah. But they came back. Credit to them. They came back. Kyler Murray, I don't know if you saw this on social media or anything, but had a two-point conversion where I think he ran around. I think it was a two-point conversion. So the ball's on the two-yard line. But I think he ran a total of 85 yards and had the ball for like 15 seconds or something like that. Like, no one was open. He just kept running around, buying time.
That might be the most Kyler Murray play, I think, of all time.
Okay, is it just me, too? Or does Kyler Murray kind of run like a toddler a little bit? Like, when he's, like, full speed, like, the way he flails his arms and, like, move, like, he's kind of just, like, low to the ground, like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's something about it.
I can see it.
There's something about it.
I don't want to be offensive to Kyler Murray, but I'm 100% sure that he is never going to listen to this, so I don't really care. It's a thing that I notice with short people, and I say that as a short person. For the listeners who can't see me, I like to imagine I'm 6'1 to all of you, but I'm not. I'm a short person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably run the same way. Hmm. Some of my shorter friends run the same way.
Kyler Murray's probably a little faster than you, though.
Well, substantially.
Yeah. Anyways, it was a great game, though. Cardinals came back, and I think they won it overtime.
Overtime, yeah.
Sure.
And those, Raiders, yeah.
Yeah.
Disappointing start for the Raiders.
Yeah. They have some weapons for sure with, you know, Devontae Adams.
For sure.
I think Derek Carr is a little underrated in my opinion. But
I agree. But they're 0-2.
They are 0-2. That's tough. But and then lastly, I picked the Bears over the Packers. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
A big mistake.
I thought more about that after the podcast ended and really disagreed with
you. In Green Bay, no less.
In Lambeau, yeah. I turned on the game and I just briefly saw the score and I was like, wow, that was a mistake. Aaron Rodgers definitely owns some real estate in Chicago. Like,
for sure.
Like it's like even no matter how bad the Packers looked week one, no matter how decent the Bears looked week one, it just
yeah. And I forgot that Green Bay always looks terrible week one and bounces back
That's
week
true.
Two.
That's
and
true.
I forgot about that and well, it happened again.
Yeah, yeah. So the Packers ended up winning that game. So yeah, Landon went like 3-0 and I went like 2-2. So not you know, so solid weeks. Nothing horrendous. Landon was pretty on fire.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank
pretty
you.
On fire. Well, let's move on here.
Yeah,
since Doc's here, we have some questions for him. And let's just talk first. This podcast, we've talked a lot about sports. We also like to talk a little theology. And so I think, Doc, maybe we just want to get your perspective as a doctor. What got you into like studying theology? Like what made you interested? Kind of just go into that a little bit maybe.
Well, I came on thinking that we were going to talk about my high school athletic career. So I'm a little confused by this line.
I mean, we can if you want. Maybe for a future episode.
I mean,
we'll go over Doc's high school career.
I mean, I'm just saying, you want to talk about your segment of overrated, underrated. I think within my family, I am an underrated high school athlete. But
yeah. I'd be interested to hear about it.
Yeah. But another day perhaps.
Yeah, maybe for a future episode.
There you go. I became a believer when I was an eighth grader, and so from that point on, I was pretty regularly discipled, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't until I was probably a sophomore in high school when I read my first like serious theological book,
which
it was R.C. Sproul's book, Chosen by God, which is sort of like a classic text on Calvinism. And that really got me interested in thinking about those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not a Calvinist at the time. But I was just blown away with, wow, this is really challenging some of the ways I think and gave a compelling vision of who God is. And then when I was in college, I was involved with Crew, and I had another discipler who in the Bible study that he led, we actually went through a systematic theology book. We took a chapter each week and would dig into that and had just phenomenal conversations. Mm-hmm. And those were some of the things that sparked my interest. I had a roommate that we talked a lot of theology. He's now a professor at Spring Arbor, teaches Bible there. So
shout out to Rich.
There you go, Rich.
He's Rich from Michigan.
Yeah, Rich from Michigan.
He's a fun hang.
He is a great hang. He is. So those were things that kind of fueled my interest in theology as a young man, and then just sensed a call to go into ministry of some kind. And what eventually just started to happen was as I had opportunities to lead Bible studies with Crew and even teach in the weekly meetings, others came around and confirmed areas of gifting and how they saw the Lord using me. And that was really important in kind of steering me towards ending up pursuing a ministry where that's what I do is end up eventually writing and teaching and studying different forms of theology and scripture.
Yeah, that's really good. So you talked about theology, and I think there are some of our listeners that I'm sure love to study these things, like systematic theology type of thing. But there are probably some that aren't maybe as into necessarily going through like
the depths of theology. Like there's different levels. I think we all would agree that theology is crucially important to what we think about. But I think this is where you're moving. And so I'm going to steal the question from you.
Go ahead.
So like, why is it important for everyone to study theology? And I think like a little add-on to that is how far would you advise the average person to get into theology?
Hmm. Well, I think the place to start is to say that everyone already has a theology. Yeah. Everyone's already a theologian of some kind. And so even people who have never done any sort of reading or study of theology in a formal sense, they have a theology. They have some sort of belief about God. And in the most basic sense, that's what theology is your belief about who God is, what he's like. And even if you say, well, I don't believe God exists, well, that's still a form of theology. Mm-hmm. So everyone has theology. So it's not should I or shouldn't I? It's more of you already have that. The question then is, are you going to be – how knowledgeable about it are you going to be? And that's not to say that everyone needs to devote focused attention and extended study of theology. I'm not saying everyone has to do that. But I think if you are a follower of Jesus, then you should have at least some basic motivation to understand more about who God is and how we should rightly relate to him. Mm-hmm. And in the most basic sense, that's what good theology helps you do, is to relate to God in a more biblical and faithful way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I think how would you say for students? Because one thing I've noticed is like going to Moody and studying theology a lot more than I did when I was younger, it's very easy to get bogged down in the terminology or the fundamentals of certain doctrines, mm-hmm. and then miss out like start losing the personal relationship or the personal aspect of like what theology is pointing to. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I've really had to work to point myself back. How would you suggest not getting bogged down in the details?
I think two things are probably especially helpful. The first is making sure that you're involved in a local church, because being around people who are not in the everyday study of theology reminds you of the sort of importance of the everyday Christian life, mm-hmm. and that it forces you to remember that theology has consequences, that it's not just about putting together some crisp and clean intellectual system, but ultimately it is about helping us understand how better to live the Christian life. Mm-hmm. And when that's kept in view, that helps, I think, ground us so we don't get unnecessarily lost in some of the finer points of theology. Not to say that they shouldn't be discussed. There's absolutely a place for discussing the finer points. It's just a matter of not getting lost in them. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece I would say is that a good helpful exercise is to constantly be coming back to the question of how does this, whatever area of theology we're talking about or whatever issue, how does this help us understand the gospel better? Mm. And having the gospel as the sort of overarching framework that we're thinking about. And so if you're talking about more sort of abstract ideas, you know, things like the simplicity of God, which is one of those things where you're like, okay, that's very abstract, that God is a simple being. Or even the doctrine of the Trinity, where you're like, okay, one God but three persons, and how does that work? Coming back to how does that help me better understand the gospel of what God has done for us through Jesus, I think is one of those kind of reference points that I would encourage people to keep referring back to, mm-hmm. to try to make those connections.
Yeah, yeah, that's really good. That's really good.
So you mentioned earlier about teaching, and you had people kind of come alongside you and confirm gifting in that area. What was that ultimately like the main deciding factor, or were there other deciding factors that made you want to get into teaching specifically, like at like a seminary or college or that that level?
I think that that was obviously a pretty major piece. Part of it too was just having a desire to do it, mm-hmm. and finding a significant measure of enjoyment in doing it. Now, that doesn't mean that just because you want to do something and enjoy doing it that that's what God's calling you to, but that's often a big piece of it is mm-hmm. Being able to find ways where you serve the Lord and you find joy in that. And you find yourself wanting to gravitate towards that, as well as the accompanying giftings in doing that. I mean, it started off for me as simple as leading a Bible study mm-hmm. as a college student, as a college sophomore, leading a Bible study in a dorm and working with four or five freshman guys and teaching them the basics of the Christian life and getting to know them personally. And over time, that developed into getting more opportunities to teach in our larger group meetings with crew. But I mean, the first sermon I ever preached, I'm not even sure if you know this story, was I was a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
And it was at a homeless shelter. So our youth group went to volunteer at this homeless shelter. And we get there and we're getting kind of organized about what's going to happen there. And my youth pastor says to me, well, we're going to do a little worship service and you're going to share the message.
Wow.
And this is giving me like 15, 20 minutes in advance notice.
Love that for you. That's horrible.
That's tough.
That's
yeah.
tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
So but I preached on Romans 10. You know, was very terrified and thrilled that it seemed to go well and was reasonably well received. And, you know, my youth pastor managed to affirm, like, I see these giftings, I see these abilities, and I think this is something that the Lord could use you in. So,
yeah, for sure. I want to take this in another direction here and maybe put you on the spot a little bit.
Okay.
You also are a writer of many books, that you can, you know, plug if you want, but,
they're pretty good.
They are very good. But what do you like? I don't even know how to phrase this, but I guess I'll just start with, what do you enjoy so much about specifically writing, mm-hmm. that's different from like maybe teaching?
I think that the major benefit of writing is it forces you to be precise. Mm-hmm. And the thoughts that are sort of swimming around in your head, when you have to write them down on a page, it forces you to crystallize them. And I think that the mere act of writing is different than sort of just verbal teaching in a classroom, because teaching tends to be more free-flowing. Not that you don't have a structure, but you know, I don't manuscript out my lectures yeah. in class. I have outlines. I kind of work through them, and I'll have bullet points, and I'll riff off of those. But there is something about writing that tends to be more focused and more precise. And you know, at the risk of this isn't as bad as it's about to sound. I can, in essence, say anything I want in the classroom.
Right.
Right? I mean, I have a lot of freedom, tons of freedom in the classroom. But when you write something, someone else is going to look at that. Someone, and both in a typically in a theological sense, And also in a just a writing communication sense of mm-hmm. making sure that it's communicated clearly and that thoughts flow. And so there's in one sense a greater level of accountability
yeah.
in the writing, because when I teach, what I say is heard and then it's just done. The writing process is I write something and editors look at it and they send stuff back and say, this point is unclear, or are you sure that you want to say it this way, or I didn't follow the logic of this connection and this connection, or you repeated yourself here. You've already said this three paragraphs ago. Those sorts of things make it in some ways a much more precise way of crystallizing what you think. And it also has the added benefit of once I write it down, I can go back to it very easily. The number of times – and I remember when I was a PhD student working under Doug Moo, who's a prominent New Testament scholar. I remember asking him a question. He's written probably the best commentary on Romans in the English language in the last 75 years, something like that. And I remember asking him, so what do you think about – and I asked him a specific question about a verse in Romans. And he said, I'm not really sure. I'd have to go back and look at what I wrote. And I just remember being like floored by that and thinking, what do you mean you don't remember? Like you wrote it down, but you know, it was a while ago and he had – and now I have the same reaction to people when they say, well, what do you think about this verse in Galatians? And I'll pause and sometimes I'll have to say, I'd have to go back and look at my commentary to know what I think about that.
Right.
But it's there. Yeah. It's there. And even just on a lesser scale when it comes to not just things I've published, but you know, if I've preached a passage before, it's nice to be able to go back and say, now how did I do that? What was the exact wording I used for this? And to be able to repurpose it and redo it. So,
yeah. Right. Well, it's interesting too, because one thing I've learned in theology is like you have to be so specific and like as history has like progressed, like we have to get more and more specific in describing and communicating what we believe. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine when writing is you've had editors and you've had time to think about and that you've been as specific and as clear as you want to and can be. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to – for me anyway, I mean obviously you are far smarter than I am. Let me not confuse anybody here. But like I don't want to say something dumb and then go back and be like, wow, that was not at all what I meant to communicate. Mm-hmm. And so is that kind of what you're
– Yeah, for sure. And still inevitably, when you write enough stuff, you're eventually going to write something that you look back at and go, ugh.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you about that actually. Is there a specific example that you can think of, something that you've gone back and been like, wow, what was I thinking there?
That's been – I tend to find that more often in going back to older sermons and thinking, ugh, come on. You need to be better than that. You know, I've come across things like, you know, I wrote the Galatians commentary and, you know, I'd written a dissertation on Galatians. And so there were one or two places where I can remember specifically changing my mind on a few minor things and thinking, oh, yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I was wrong about that previously. But one nice thing about within, you know, kind of the scholarly realm is that's to be expected, that, that people change their minds. They think more about something. They get more evidence or they find someone else who writes something from a different perspective. It makes you think and go, oh, actually I think his view is better. Yeah. I think that's right and I was wrong.
Yeah, I think that's encouraging because I think a lot of times people have this thought that they if they put something out there, then they like – that's your opinion and you cannot change your mind. Mm-hmm. And like I think it's important to know and encouraging to know like, you know, we can read scripture and read things and change our mind about what we thought previously maybe. And that's like kind of the beauty of like as we go through our Christian life and understand truth, like, oh, like I was wrong about that. Like
for sure.
I can, you know, this came up and it's really changed my mind.
Yep.
And that's like we'll never fully understand God. So it's a joy to like even like be able to like, oh, I was wrong and this is a new beautiful truth that I can understand about Christ.
Right.
That type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it literally happened to me last semester. I was writing a paper on – I literally forgot the word, what it is, but like whether God changes or not.
Immutability.
Yes, that's the one. You'd think I would remember after writing a paper on it. But I wrote a paper on immutability, and in the paper I claimed, like, I made my argument, submitted it, was proud of myself, and like 2 weeks later, I talked to like two different professors and was like, I disagree with myself. Like, yeah. Whatever. And yeah, like, yeah, it's wonderful because it's all part of learning. And like Jake said, yeah, I mean, we will never learn the extent of God. And so.
And I think too, part of the, when it comes to the world of writing, part of what you need to learn is to what degree of confidence do you state conclusions? Mm. And to, that it's okay to say, I'm pretty sure it's this. That not every decision has to be a, it is absolutely this and I have no questions anymore. That it's okay to say there are good arguments all around. Based on what I can see, it seems more likely or slightly more likely that this is the right way to interpret this or the right way to understand this idea or this text.
Yeah, for
sure.
That's
really interesting.
Last question I want to ask you before we move on here, and this is putting you on the spot again. Do you have a favorite writing project that you've done or something that you've like been like very proud of, like, yeah, like that was really, really – really good.
Well, it's like asking which of my children is my favorite.
Me, right?
And I can never answer that question because I love both of my sons equally. Mm-hmm. And so,
shout out to John.
There you go. Shout out to John. But I mean, when it comes to writing projects, I think probably two of them stand out. The first is one that I don't expect our listeners to have ever read or probably ever read themselves. But I co-edited a project back in 2014 that's known in the academic world as a Festschrift, which is a German word.
Please elaborate.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm lost.
Landon has the most confused look I've ever seen.
which translated roughly means celebratory writing. And so within the academic world, there's this tradition that when a scholar reaches like age 65 or 70, that former students and colleagues will contribute different essays or chapters on areas that that scholar has written about, and then you present it to them as kind of like a birthday, a surprise birthday present or celebration of their life and ministry.
Well, it's not much of a surprise anymore, is it?
Well, it depends how you do it because we managed to keep it a secret from Doug Moo, who is the scholar that we honored. And so getting to be one of the two editors on that and get prominent scholars to contribute to that, guys like N.T. Wright and others, and getting to interact with them and then to surprise Doug Moo with that at a big academic conference in front of a group of probably like 300-400 people and totally catch him off guard and present him with this was something that is something I won't forget because he's such a significant New Testament scholar. He has such an impact on my life, and so to be a part of honoring him is something that I'll never forget. Even though that book is not a big seller, it wasn't written for that, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the other one would be the Philippians commentary, because it's the first commentary I wrote.
Mm-hmm. You also took a lot of pictures of it when we were in the
I did, yes.
I can tell you were proud of it.
Yes. So, but I remember when I was in my PhD program thinking, Lord, it would be cool if just some point in my academic ministry if I could get to write a commentary, just one. And that was the first. And it was something I enjoyed immensely. It was very well received. And now I'm I've written commentaries as well on 2 Peter and Jude and also on Galatians, and currently working on one on Luke and on, under contract for one on Acts as well. And so it's my favorite kind of writing to do. So
that's fun.
God's been kind to give me those opportunities.
That's awesome. Awesome. Wow. That's good exciting stuff. Well, let's move on to our last segment here. And this one is bound to maybe cause some disagreement, some discussion.
I'm excited about it.
We're going to do a little overrated, underrated. So I'm going to lay out a thing, and Doc, you can participate in this as well. I'm going to lay something out, and we are going to discuss whether we think it's over or underrated. And this can be anything.
Or adequately rated.
Or just rated. Yeah. Not over or under, just rated. Item number one.
Okay.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. How we feel about Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I would say it's rated, though. It's not better than it's said to be. It's not worse than it's said to be.
Okay. Where would you put like Cinnamon Toast Crunch on like a – I'm not saying like give me a top 10, but like where would you put it? Like would you put it like towards the top? Would you put it like just in the top 10?
Between 4 and 6
between
would
four
probably
and six.
Be my guess.
Okay. I think that's pretty fair, Doc.
I would also go with rated because I think it's an elite cereal.
It's really good. Yeah.
It's solid.
I had – okay. With a bunch of my friends from one of my friend groups like here on campus, we had this – long debate. Like it was like a year long debate.
Wow.
About Cinnamon Toast Crunch or Lucky Charms. Like that was like the big debate. And I think we got so like heels in the ground about our one side that it just caused like just a bunch of tension in our friendship.
Wow.
Like
I get it. Like which side were you on?
I'm definitely on the Cinnamon Toast Crunch side. But I think it's rated pretty high. Like yeah. I would probably agree that's rated.
Yeah,
but.
I really don't hear people like trashing Cinnamon Toast Crunch. People talk about it when I hear it. It's always very glowingly like, oh, Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
If you think it's like one of the best cereals, though,
I think it's one of the best.
Like in your top 10, where might it be?
Top 3 for sure.
Top 3 for sure. Yeah. See?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I mean, we don't need to get into it. I think I disagree there.
All right. Let's move on. Number two is going to be a sports one.
Yep.
Dak Prescott, overrated. Overrated. I would agree with that statement.
Like 100% overrated.
I think he might be one of the most overrated quarterbacks in the NFL. Like
maybe one of the most overrated professional athletes in the NFL, which like props to him for getting paid.
Yeah.
Like he did for being as bad as he is. As injured as he is. He's injured every year.
It's funny to me how the Cowboys play in a pretty rough division. Like, not the best division, and they throw the ball a lot, and yet the Cowboys still really struggle to make the playoffs, / if they do, they get knocked out pretty early. Like, I think last year they had a really good year, and they got knocked out by the 49ers, but I could stand on a soapbox for a while. I think he's really overrated, in my opinion. But
I agree.
And not just because I'm an Ohio State fan and Zeke's in the backfield and I think they should give the ball to Zeke more, but they have so many other weapons besides Zeke, that they could use. Like, and I don't know. I just think he's really overrated.
Yeah. No, I agree.
He gets overrated because of the franchise he plays
That's
for.
That's fair. Yeah. America's team.
Wise words from Doc.
Just like players who play for, you know, like in the NBA, like you look at certain guys that they get more buzz because they play with the Lakers, for example.
Patrick Beverley.
Or, I mean, a guy who is an example of that, this is going back a little ways, but Andrew Bynum. You remember him?
Yes.
Andrew Bynum.
Like, people were talking about him like he was like one of the, you know, I don't know, 15 best players in the NBA at points. And you're like, no, he's not. He just plays for the Lakers. That's it. He was not
even like a top two player on that in that starting five. Yeah. Like they had Pau Gasol and Kobe, obviously. Like, yeah.
That's a wonderful point. All right. That's really good.
Next one. Cane's Chicken.
What are we saying Cane's Chicken is rated?
I would say a lot of people – what I hear is a lot of people ask the question Chick-fil-A or Cane's Chicken.
Okay.
So I feel like it's kind of at that level.
Wow.
I would say.
It's not that good, but it's really good. They're very different.
How so?
Cane's Chicken is more Southern.
Have you had the Cane's Chicken sauce?
Yes, very good.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
It's like, unbelievable.
I've never even thought of comparing Cane's and Chick-fil-A, which sounds silly because they're both chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just different.
Okay.
It's just different. Maybe because canned chicken you get normally, like at least when I – like you get tenders, you know, which you can get at Chick-fil-A. But Chick-fil-A is known for the sandwich.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Cane's chicken sauce or Chick-fil-A sauce?
Chick-fil-A sauce.
I disagree.
I'm going to go Cane's on that one.
Yeah, Cane's. It's phenomenal.
It's good. I'm a sucker
for
Chick-fil-A.
We need a Cane's. Or a Chick-fil-A, honestly. In
the, I'll settle for either. But we have a Popeyes.
We have a Popeyes. But
overrated.
You know it's overrated. Chick-fil-A.
Oh, stop
wow.
it.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Elaborate.
Overrated. It's very good. But the way some people around here seem to talk about Chick-fil-A as if – I mean – as if Jesus himself handcrafted it and gives it out just makes me want to say
– That's what he fed the 5,000 was Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's really good but like let's dial it back in terms of – it's not Wedding Supper of the Lamb.
I don't know. When I think about it, if I could have picked any food, cost not included, to have at my wedding reception – it probably would have been Chick-fil-A. I think it's that good.
Okay. I think – here's the thing and then we can move on to the next thing. But I think to people in this like Warsaw, Winona Lake area, I think it's rated even higher than normal because we don't have, one.
It's a phantom.
So when they get it, it's like, oh my gosh.
That's a good point.
It's amazing.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. But the thing about that though is I grew up in that. And when I grew up there like not having Chick-fil-A a lot, I actually didn't love it. It took me moving to a place where I could have Chick-fil-A every day. I was head over heels.
Okay.
I mean.
Anyway, okay.
It's the Lord's chicken.
It's the Lord's chicken. All right. What about Parks and Rec, the TV show Parks and Rec?
Oh, man, that's tough. I love Parks and Rec. I would actually say a little overrated.
Okay. I would see, here's the thing. I feel like the comparison is The Office because it's a similar show.
Right. That's where it's overrated.
And I would say The Office is better than Parks and Rec. So that's why I would maybe say that it's overrated. And I will say I think the show is overrated, but I think some of the individual characters are phenomenal. Like,
well, I think the show is great itself. Yeah. The characters
it are is good. Yeah. It is a good show. Really funny. Doc is looking at me like I'm –
and your answers just make it clear that the correct answer is it is underrated.
Wow.
Explain.
Wow.
Okay. So I think – and you're right that the comparison is often with The Office. Some of this I think is a generational difference that I think people that are closer to my age enjoy Parks and Rec more than they enjoy The Office.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
I can see that.
Because Parks and Rec is newer.
It is. It is. But I think in terms of it just feels like the audience that it seems to resonate most with, I think my generation is a little bit closer to the Parks and Rec vibe than it is to the Office vibe. Mm. But having said that, the Office is fantastic. It's great. I just think Parks and Rec is better. Because there is just no character comparable to Ron Swanson.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
That's a great point.
He's so funny.
Ron Swanson might be the best TV character of all time.
He is legendary. And I also think what's fascinating about Parks and Rec to me is when you watch the first season to season and a half into probably two seasons, it's clear they're trying to figure out like they're kind of an Office-like show because they've got like the characters talking directly to the camera and sort of that sort of thing. But if you notice, they start off with initially Leslie Knope is kind of this semi-incompetent like Michael Scott.
That's interesting.
But then they realize pretty quickly on, no, we're actually going to make her really competent at her job in contrast to Michael Scott who is abysmally awful at his job.
Right.
And so but yeah, I think both are great shows. Both make me laugh. The cringiest episode out of both of those shows is Scott's Tots. Almost impossible to watch.
I cannot watch it.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Oh, no.
Next, we're going to go back to a sports one.
Okay.
The Seattle Seahawks uniforms. Now, I put this in there partially because my lovely mother made a comment the other day when they were playing about how I feel like before she said that she liked them, and then like now she says that there's too much green, and maybe I'm wrong, misquoting her there. So if I am, I apologize. But
you'll hear about it.
Hear about it at home. But how do we feel about the Seattle Seahawks uniforms? Mainly just like the I was just thinking like their alternate like neon green. Like is it too much? Like
it's
is it
too much?
Too much? You say overrated? Then?
I would say overrated because the thing is, a couple of years ago, like when they were when the Seahawks were really good, when they won a couple of Super Bowls. Or one is, you know, when they were good.
Mm-hmm.
Their uniforms were tremendous. The hints of green,
yeah.
The deep blue, really good. They got too much positive feedback on the color scheme and have
just
leaned
gone crazy.
Way too far into it.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you there. I would say probably a little overrated, but
I agree completely.
Next we have Jimmy John's.
I guess rated, maybe a little overrated. Jimmy John's is good. The thing that gets me with Jimmy John's is the lack of bread options.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's really it.
One of the main killers. I think many people know this, that know me and listen to this podcast, know that I am a tremendous Subway fan.
Like, yeah.
One of the greatest restauranting franchises, maybe of all time, maybe.
All right, you might need to take it easy a little bit, but
that's a little rude. No, but I would just much rather go to Subway, like with the multiple bread options,
me too. The toast option.
I just think Subway is a little bit better. My girlfriend Autumn is gonna hate me for that, but she's a big fan of Jimmy John's. But I would say it's probably rated to slightly overrated. I'd probably agree with that statement.
Doc?
I'll go overrated.
Yeah.
I love it.
Next, we have quarter zips.
From you, overrated. From the rest of society, rated.
Wow.
Jake loves quarter zips more than anybody I've ever known. Quarter zips are great. A little overrated from you.
Can I just give a pitch for quarter zips?
I mean, I feel like you have to now.
I'm as you kind of said, I'm obviously going to say underrated. But the beauty of a quarter zip is that you can wear it to something a little bit more formal and get away with it. You can also wear it to something like athletic.
It depends on what kind of quarter zip we're talking about. If you're wearing an Ohio State quarter zip to something formal, you've made a mistake.
Well, okay. Like, for example, so one of the things I do here on campus is I work in the sports information department. So I work like volleyball games, basketball games, all the games.
Whatever. Uh-huh.
And part of our like formal like – professional look is we wear khakis and a quarter zip.
Yeah, that's fair. But it has Grace logo on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it still looks professional is what I'm saying.
It looks like, professional if you're working in the context that the quarter zip matches.
But you can also you can wear a quarter zip like with like basketball shorts or something like that. I think that doesn't look weird to me.
No, I would agree.
I think so. That's why I'm saying it's underrated because you can do it with both contexts, I think. Doc, we need your help here. Help.
SOS.
There's a sense in which the quarter zip is kind of like the mullet.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it's
– Wow.
It's business at the top. It's sort of the inverse of the mullet, right? So it's sort of like with the opening and more like the collared look. So it's get a little bit nicer than just a generic kind of like – light sweatshirt or something like that, but still comfortable and casual. My question is, Jake, how many quarter zips do you think you have?
Oh, no.
Should we set an over-under on this?
Over-under, yes.
Over-under 8?
I think that's fair. I'm going to go over.
I'm thinking.
What are you going with?
I'm going to go over.
I think 8 was a great line. I think I might be around that line. Maybe in the next episode, I'll have to
you
count
them.
You
should go
them.
Back to the closet and
I'll count them.
Them.
And in the next episode, I'll update the listeners of how many quarter zips I have. yeah, that's funny.
I enjoy a good quarter zip, yes.
Yeah, it's a great look. And I think some people might give it like a, that's like a dad with two kids type of look. Like,
It is it is a generational clothing item, I will say, and that any generation can wear it, any body type can wear it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that sense, I get what you're saying. I think you just hype it up a little bit.
That's fair. That's probably fair. Okay, two more, and then we're going to wrap up here.
Yeah. I put the Colts on there.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Because I'm heartbroken.
Overrated.
I mean, seriously, we were probably the most overrated team going into the NFL season. I had Super Bowl hopes.
Yikes.
Yes. And
I saw someone from like NBC or something that predicted the Colts to like get either to the conference championship or the Super Bowl. I can't remember.
It's a nightmare. It's a garbage fire in Indianapolis. Mm. Matt Ryan looks like he's about 102.
Teams know what the Colts are going to do. Well, like their offensive line is not great, and everyone in the world knows that Jonathan Taylor is probably going to get at least 25 carries a game.
You would think so, but he got 9 against the Jaguars.
Okay, that's pretty bad.
Like less than 15, and it horrible.
That's bad.
Literally horrible. We play the Chiefs this week. Yes. I have like it's. Yikes. I mean,
I feel like though for the Colts done. Though that that's not much pressure though. Because if they win, that's like a turning point in your season type of win.
I would actually be more upset if we won that game. Then we'd go 1-1-1 from tying to the Texans, losing 24-0 to the Jaguars, and then beating the best team in football. Mm. It doesn't make any sense. I mean,
that would be fascinating.
It would be fascinating. We have a great roster. We're hopeless. It's done.
Maybe we need to
draft a quarterback desperately. I'm tired of this giving old quarterbacks a place to retire.
C.J. Stroud.
Yeah. I was literally just about to
say. If we tank for C.J. Stroud,
trade all of your picks to get the number one pick and get C.J. Stroud.
Well, at this rate, I think he's playing like this.
They won't even need to trade it. That's true. That's true. Tank for C.J. And then last one, Landon put on here.
Yeah.
And this is maybe just to like
– this isn't even to get at you. This is – because you mentioned school debates, and it brought me back to a school debate that we had that might have been the most heated debate I've ever been in. And it's not about any – it has nothing to do with college football, universities, nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with cost of living. This is simply based on the physical beauty of Michigan, the state.
The state, yeah. I don't remember this debate.
Not you.
Okay.
Do you go to Moody?
Oh, I thought you were talking about like in high school.
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay, there we go. Okay, sorry.
Interesting.
Forgive me. At Moody – we have some Michigan locals. My argument is that Michigan is not a top 10 state in regards to beauty.
Hmm. Top 10.
Interested to hear the thoughts. If it helps, I can name like some states, in my opinion, that would beat Michigan out. Maybe sneaks in at 9 or 10, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I think Michigan is outside of the top 10.
Thank you.
But – it's probably in the 11 to 15 range.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I completely agree.
I would probably agree with that. I actually went to Charlevoix, Michigan this summer, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
My argument has never been that Michigan is not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as pretty as some people from Michigan say.
Yeah. Some people would like put it in the top 5 or top 10 or something.
Right.
Like that.
And I'm like,
I actually saw a list. I don't even know where I found this, but I saw a list of like the most beautiful states, which obviously is like, it's so subjective. Like,
I mean, yeah.
You know, whatever. But I think they had Indiana like 48 or something, 49.
I mean, respect.
I think they had Michigan at like, I'm trying to remember. I think it was like around the 10 range, kind of where we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I thought that was probably fair.
That's fair. I mean, like, it's pretty. And the one argument that I heard from Michigan being top 10 was interesting, was that it has something to offer that no other state does in the Great Lakes, which is intriguing enough. But it's still not prettier than Idaho.
Hmm. For me, I've never been to Idaho. I have no idea.
I've also – okay, I should quantify that. I've not been to Idaho.
Okay.
But I know somebody from Idaho, and I've seen lovely pictures. Hmm. Which, granted, you can get lovely pictures of anywhere. I mean, Indiana could look number one.
Winona Lake sunsets could make it be
number one. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
But anyway, Michigan's not a top 10 state in terms of beauty.
No, it's not. Though, again, keep in mind, I think a lot depends on what do you like.
It's true.
I mean,
it's true.
You know, if you're enamored with the mountains, then all of the Rocky Mountain states are going to be on that list ahead of where Michigan would be. Or if you like the ocean, I mean, yes, the Great Lakes are nice and Michigan does have some nice beaches, but you know, it's not going to compare to, you know, states that are on the oceans that have actual ocean coasts, you know.
So. Yeah.
You know what else Michigan doesn't have? the Horseshoe.
Oh, dear me.
In Columbus, Ohio.
You know what? We're moving on. I think it's time to wrap here.
Ohio Stadium. At the Ohio State University.
Oh, thank you for listening to the That Stuff podcast.
Yeah. We should wrap things up here. Yeah. But yeah, thank you for listening to the podcast. Yeah.
We need to plug our socials.
Yes, let's do that. You can follow us on Instagram at That's Tough Pod, also on Twitter at That's Tough _Pod, and you can email us at thetoughpodcast@gmail.com. Doc, thanks for coming on the show.
Would you like to plug Various and Sundry really quick?
Always. If you want a podcast, if you enjoyed this podcast, you might also enjoy the Various and Sundry podcast, where my co-host John Sloat and I talk about a similar range of topics: sports, theology, culture, Bible, a little travel. We talk travel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk books.
Experience
we're
travel.
Yes.
Travelers.
Yes. Yes. Though you've traveled with me.
I've traveled a little bit, and I'm going to travel with you.
You are.
In May. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.